Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Wipeout. That's how most of us feel after we spend a day, a week, a month, or a lifetime freaking out and worrying about things, most of which we can't control, and most of which never happen, according to a new study out of the University of Cincinnati. 85% of the things we worry and fret about never happen. So whether you're a casual worrier or have a full-blown anxiety disorder, you'll learn a lot from my guest today. Dr. Linda Minnell is here today to talk about letting go of worry, her new book about finding God's peace and contentment as you face the storms of life. Dr. Minnell is a national speaker and best-selling author. She appears regularly on national broadcast and is a network news contributor. We're excited to have her here today. Dr. Minnell, welcome to Heartline.
Hey, great talking with you, Rita.
The climate of the culture today can certainly facilitate anxiety and worry. So we're all freaked out about stuff like the economy, terrorism, the job market, not to mention the stress of our personal lives. Is that what motivated you to write a book on worry?
Well, it certainly was one of the factors because you're right. There's so much in our world. If you just watch the national news for about an hour, you can feel pretty depressed and pretty worried after a while. So that was a part of it. But honestly, it is something that worry is something that I've struggled with for a lot of years, and it goes back to a time when I was younger and I had a brother who was killed from a terrorist bomb in an airplane. And after that happened, the loss of control, the feeling pretty helpless and pretty powerless, and of course feeling very vulnerable to whatever might happen in the future was one of the places where worry began to set in to my family and to me as well. And so part of it was that I knew as I examined Scripture and I looked at all the Scriptures that were very specific, do not worry. I thought, okay, God doesn't give us a directive to not worry and then basically look at us and go, well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
So I figured that I had to really examine the Scripture and look at this and say, what is it? I have to go beyond managing my worry, which is one of the things I did a lot with my clients for years, and get to the point of actually eliminating worry in my life. And I'm finding out that it really is a journey, but it is possible to do that.
Do you think some people are more genetically prone to worry than other people? And if so, what traits do they possess?
Well, it really is true. In fact, there was a few years ago, there was a Yale researcher that found what they called a worry gene. And this gene predicted the tendency for some people to what we call ruminate, which is basically just to go over and over things in your head, which is what a worrier does. Worry is the mental part of anxiety. It's a habit that we develop. But some people have more of a predisposition to this than other people do based on their genetics. Now, when I say that, you know, sometimes people panic and go, okay, that's it. I have the genetic predisposition to worry.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, that's it. What do I do? But you know, the truth is that there are predispositions to depression, to anxiety, to alcoholism, to all these other things. And all that means is that you need to be much more aware that you might have that predisposition and be much more intentional with handling it and knowing what to do and recognizing it when you begin to do it so that you can get to a point where you can eliminate worry.
Yeah, most of my clients would tell me that they don't want to have anxiety and worry. And
well, who does?
It's a
horrible thing to have to live with, because even though it's mental, it does impact our physical health, and it impacts our relationships, and it impacts our spiritual life. I mean, it basically impacts the whole person we are, so that's why it's so important to learn how to get rid of it.
Well, it's interesting you said you struggled with it, because I've struggled with anxiety as well, and I felt the same way. I mean, I don't want to have this, yet at the same time, worry provides a payoff for us, doesn't it? It maybe gives us a sense of control or makes us feel like we're doing something.
Right, and that's one of the reasons, this is kind of an old psychology adage, that people don't do things unless it has some kind of a purpose for them, or what we call serves a function. So when we're worrying, we do feel sometimes that our worry is somehow stopping the bad thing from happening, or that it's preparing us for the worst outcome. You know, for me, sometimes it felt like I was somehow controlling an external event, which I wasn't. And also, I've noticed that with a lot of older people, when you talk about letting go of worry, they will say, well, it just really shows I care. If I didn't worry about my granddaughter, then she might not think that I cared about her. So worry always feels like we're doing something, but the problem is, as you know, it doesn't do any of those things that we think it does.
Right.
And so we do think it has a function, but in reality, the only function it serves is to make us feel bad physically, emotionally, relationally, and spiritually.
Absolutely. Self-talk's a huge part of anticipatory anxiety and worry, but most of us don't realize the subtle ways that we sabotage ourselves with our internal monologues. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, because that is such a key to letting go of worry, because there are worried thoughts that come into our mind. Now, in the past, years and years, I've been a therapist for over 30 years, so we had different information years ago. We treated people sometimes differently than we do now, and we used to tell people, just stop those thoughts. Just grab those thoughts and stop those thoughts.
Yeah, or snap a rubber band on your arm or tap your
head. Yeah, and try to get rid of the thought. Now, we've moved a little bit beyond that, because what we've found is that when you try to stop a thought, it only makes the thought a little bit stronger in your mind. It's kind of like dieting. When we tell people, don't think about food, what's the very thing we think about?
Food.
Mm-hmm. So worry is kind of like that. Going up to someone and saying, stop worrying, don't think that way, doesn't work when we're talking to people. So what we have to learn to do is recognize that worried thought when it comes into our head. So the thought will come into our head. And I tell people, it's kind of like your computer. You get a lot of spam that comes into your computer, and it's not like you look at it and you don't see it. You see it's there. But the difference is, you can either click on that spam and open it up, or you can leave it and delete it. And so that's kind of a principle when we're talking about worry. We need to identify that the worried thought is there, and we need to look at that thought and do what the scripture says, which is, the scripture talks about taking a thought captive. And I started thinking about, well, what does that mean, to take a thought captive? And I'm a woman like you are, so I'm not always thinking about war games, but I did start thinking about what's involved in war. When somebody is taken into captivity, they're confined. And they're brought into a place where they cannot move around. They don't have freedom. They can't go wherever they want to go. So when you take a thought captive, you're basically confining that thought. And you're telling yourself that that thought will not wander into anxious waters. And so you recognize the thought, you confine that thought, and then you put the truth of God's word into that situation. So you take that thought that might be like, okay, I'm worried that I might have cancer. Let's say you went to the doctor and he was a little bit concerned about something he saw on X-ray. This just happened to my really good friend. And so right away she began to worry that, oh, I probably have cancer. There's something going on here. And I said, okay, let's look at that thought. Yes, there is something he saw, but there are so many other things that it could be. And the fact that he saw it means that they're attending to it and they're going to do something about it. So let's not go to the worst conclusion. Let's think about all the other things it could be. And then let's also put in the thought that God knows what this is. We trust him to help you through this situation and work on whatever it is that needs to be dealt with, and not put that thought into the worried place. And that's what she did. She took that thought captive, And that's the work that a lot of us have to do when those worried thoughts begin to enter into our mind.
Okay, so as you're talking, I'm thinking about the first thing I teach people, and that is to notice. So we got to notice the thought. That's what you're saying. We have a lot of what-if thinking. That's what your friend was doing. What if I have cancer? What if I lose my job? That kind of thing. We try to solve problems that haven't happened yet. So we have to identify that, and then we have to kind of refute that by asking, is there an alternative explanation here? Could it be something else? Yeah, he saw something, but maybe it's not cancer. And then bring ourselves back to the truth of what Christ says. I can depend on God. I can trust him with this. We really have to help people stay in the moment, don't we?
We do. And I think one of the most helpful things that I have found, and I begin the book this way because I think it's really good for people to understand that there's a difference between being worried about something and being concerned. Because I don't want people thinking, well, I'm just not going to, you know, pay attention to anything that's bad in, around me, and I'm going to live in this sort of idealized world that nothing bad's ever going to happen to me. Of course, we have bad things happen to us. But the difference is, worry, interestingly enough, Rita, comes from this German word which means to strangle. Isn't that a wild root word for worry?
Yeah. That's what it feels like almost.
It's
when
what
you think
it
feels
about like. It. Mm-hmm. It does. So it's kind of an interesting description of what worry really is. And as we've been talking, worry is usually, you know, future focused, but it's pointless and it's immobilizing. So it's important for people to understand the difference. So let me give the difference between being worried about something and actually being concerned. Because when we're concerned, we recognize a problem. We're looking at the reality of the situation, and we're noticing that there is something potentially negative here. But the difference is, when you're concerned, you're focused on the problem, you're thinking about some way to solve it, you're taking control wherever there's a possibility to take control, you might have a plan, and this is normal to be concerned. Worry, on the other hand, just circles a problem, and it brings inaction instead of action. And it feels very out of control to the person who's experiencing it, and it really distracts us from dealing with the problem. It disrupts our plans, and that's why it needs to be eliminated. So I've changed my language. I actually, when I see something, you know, maybe my kids are doing something that concerns me, or there's something that I notice in my neighborhood or something going on, I'll say, well, I'm concerned about that. And I'll start thinking about how I can maybe problem solve, what I can do, or maybe there's nothing I can do and I need to trust God in that situation. That's very different from worrying, obsessing on it, thinking the what if. And I think that's an important distinction for people to get clear in their heads.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. Because what you're talking about with the worry is the rumination you mentioned earlier.
Right.
Kind of chewing on it over and over and over again. And that becomes debilitating for us.
Right. So you can be in the reality of the situation. I don't want people to start thinking, I'm just not going to think about that because I'll worry.
That's not
you
healthy
think
either.
About things. Yeah, think about things, but you have to think about them with the reality of, is this something I can control or is this something I need to let go of? Trust God. Move in the moment of it, and like you said before, and not get so future-focused because I don't know what's coming down the road, but I'll be okay with that if God is walking along my side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that study that you were talking about in the book out of the University of Cincinnati, 85% of the things that we worry about don't actually even happen.
Right, and just think of how that impacts the physical health of most of us. And I'm at a medical school. I'm on the faculty of Eastern Virginia Medical School, and we have so much that we do in terms of the impact of the way we think and holding on to worried thoughts and stress and the impact of that on the physical body. And I think sometimes when I go around and I lecture, people are really surprised of the physical impact that worry has on the body. They really don't think about what they're doing mentally as a way of impacting their physical bodies.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that because it does affect us holistically. Tell us a little bit about what it does to our bodies.
Well, when you begin to worry, the adrenaline in your body begins to surge and your mind stays in overdrive. And what happens is there are a bunch of stress hormones that are released. And in the cases of excessive worry, it can do everything from suppressing your immune system to giving you digestive problems to giving you muscle tension, short-term memory loss. And the biggest one is that it can cause cardiac activation, which can then lead to premature coronary artery disease and heart attack. So that's pretty big.
Yeah, that's
we're talking about some very significant impacts that worry has on the body. It can also, you know, it can do the things that stress does to the body. It can give you headaches and irritability and, you know, fatigue, concentration problems, nausea, nervous energy, sweating, trembling, twitching, you name it. Almost sounds a little bit when I'm giving those symptoms like what panic does to people as well. So the impact to the body is pretty significant, which is why, again, we have to learn to calm our brains and to quiet our minds and let go of that worry so it doesn't have that negative impact on the body.
Yeah, I've had so many clients that come to me with panic disorder that have said, I've been to the ER 5 times.
Right.
I thought I was having a heart attack. And really what they were having was a panic attack.
Right, and it feels like you're dying.
Yes.
It feels like in your physical body you feel that because you have all those symptoms that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is that it's based out of the anxiety and the worry and the panic that you're feeling, not because there's some condition there that's prompting it. But it can lead to those conditions, so we have to take care of it. That's why it's important that we're talking about this.
Mm-hmm. It can lead to disease, arthritis, cancer.
Right.
There's all kinds of research out there supporting it. So
right.
How do
it's
we
like
help?
All the stress research. All the stress research. Stress impacts 6 of the leading causes of death. So that's really important that we have to learn how to manage our stress and our worry.
So how do we teach people, how do we help them to learn to calm themselves?
Well, there's a lot of things you have to do. I think one of the very first things is to pay attention to your body and to actually understand that your worried thoughts create emotions that are those emotions we talked about that are kind of panicky and worrisome and, you know, anxious emotions. And so as we calm our thoughts, as we calm our bodies, we have to look at our bodies. And a lot of people don't pay attention to their body during the day. We're so busy, we're not thinking about it. So I suggest that people just sit for a moment and just try to say to themselves, is my body tense and uptight? And if so, we can do some very practical things like deep breathing exercises. You know, it's a good thing when you're starting to feel really worried to just tell yourself, okay, just take a deep breath. Maybe take 3 deep breaths and begin to calm the physical tension in your body. That's a first step. And then the second thing to do would be to really quiet the mind. And one of the ways that we quiet the mind is taking our thoughts captive, as we talked about earlier, but also really focusing on our relationship with the Lord, because I really think that that is so key to calming our body. If we know who God is and we understand his character, it's completely reassuring. You know, God doesn't say that he's going to take us out of all the bad things, but he does say that his presence will be with us, and he'll walk us through any difficulty, that he'll never give us any more than we can handle, that when we do experience something difficult and traumatic, that his presence will be there to give us that peace that that really comes beyond our understanding. You know, I was reading this morning in our newspaper just a tragic situation of a family who a year ago lost their 2-year-old to a pool accident in their backyard. The child drowned. And then they were coming back a week ago, or yesterday, or I don't know when it was, this week somehow, sometime. They were coming back from a family vacation from Florida, and they hit something on one of the highways. I don't know, they don't know what caused it, but the family car rolled over and their 16-year-old was killed.
Oh my gosh.
And my heart just, I thought a year ago they lost their 2-year-old.
Oh.
Now they lost their 16-year-old in a car accident. Those people must be so, first of all, in shock and grief and deeply saddened by what happened. But you can just imagine that in the days to come, the anxiety that they might feel over out of control, you know, situations that they might face, and they have 3 other children, and the anxiety that come with that. Well, there's no way to deal with that to me in the natural. You would just be naturally anxious after something like that. But it's in our relationship with God that we cry out to God in those circumstances. We put our burdens on him because that's what he tells us to do. We can leave it with him. We can cry out to him. He can handle our pain and our anger and our upsets and our anxiousness and our irritable moods, but we have to leave it with Him, and we have to trust that even in those horrific situations, that His word is true, that He will somehow, as we grieve and we do all the things we need to do, that He will somehow give us His perfect peace that passes all understanding.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I know a number of years ago, my children were struck by lightning in a parasail off the coast of Florida. Yeah, and it was pretty horrific, too. They fell 20 stories from the sky.
Oh, my goodness.
Were in respiratory arrest, and it was just absolute chaos. And I remember driving to the hospital. My son was being medevaced by helicopter, and I opened my little Bible I had in my purse, and it said, God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in times of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Do not fear. And then it said, be still and know that I'm God. And in that moment of such anxiety, a peace washed over me that was just inexplainable, a peace that we know as believers. And God had me. And so I think that's what you're saying is, first of all, we have to notice. We have to pay attention to our bodies, scan our bodies, whatever we need to do. Take those moments. Use silence and solitude, even if it's for 5 minutes. Look at your physical body. Calm your thoughts. Everything you're saying is just so right on, because if not, the stress just keeps building up and building up because we just keep going, 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 and going, and then we wonder one day when we wake up why we're having a panic attack or why we're depressed.
Right.
Because we haven't taken the time to pay attention and notice not only our physical bodies but the things of the heart.
Right, and I think one of the things that is really helpful to me that a therapist once said to me was, focus on one crisis at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And stop being so future focused. And so much, I'm sure you've heard of the devotional Jesus Calling.
Yes.
So many people have this devotional, and Sarah Young has just written something that has touched the hearts of so many people. And so many times the entries in that journal that she has given us all for daily devotion is, at this moment, be with God at this moment. Calm your mind, calm your heart, trust God in the moment that He is going to be the big God that He is, and He is going to do the big things that He says He's going to do. And I really struggle. I've been on so many secular radio stations and television interviews on the book Letting Go of Worry, and I just struggle, Rita, to help people that don't know God
mm-hmm.
really eliminate worry, because I think without God in their lives, I think the normal condition would be to be worried. So without God, that's one of the reasons why people have to manage worry. But with God, that's why we can let it go. That's why we can eliminate it from our lives, because God is saying, let me be who I am in your life for this moment, for this time, for this situation, and put it on me, and I'll carry that heavy load, and I'll make your load light, and I'll give you that peace
mm-hmm.
that people in the natural can't understand, but somehow I can give it to you by my spirit, and you can actually live in that contented place that I have provided for you. What an amazing promise from God.
Yes, absolutely it is. You list 7 thought patterns that lead to worry. They're the thinking errors we were talking about earlier. Could you talk about them?
Well, I don't know if I can recall them all. I always get a little nervous when people say, I did this in a book, and then when they try to remember them, because I don't always remember what I said. But certainly, there are so many of them.
Well, catastrophizing was one.
That's a big one.
Yes.
In terms of taking it from whatever happens at that moment and making everything big and everything a problem. Another one is when you just attend, it's called selective attention, when you just attend to the negative thing that happens in your life, and you don't look around and say, well, there have been 10 positives that have just happened in the day, and this one little thing kind of trips me up, which leads me to one of the other points I wanted to make before, which is a lot of us don't know how to tolerate distress. You know, we have one little thing that happens in our day.
And we flip out.
Yeah, we just don't know how to sit with that thought and tolerate that distress for a moment and realize that as we tolerate that distress, it'll pass. This is one of the things I really learned when I was working. I have a specialty practice in working with eating disorders. And that's one of the main issues when you're working with someone with an eating problem, is that when a negative emotion comes up or a negative thought comes up, the person has a lot of trouble tolerating that and working through it. And when they realize that, oh, I can feel really, really bad for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And eventually that bad feeling does pass. And eventually I do get to the other side of it. It's very freeing that people begin to realize I can tolerate something that is really negative and get through it and get to the other end.
That's a huge point, Linda. Huge. I think you are right on the money, because most of us want to avoid a bad feeling. And so what do? We flee. And that's the worst thing we could do.
Look at the ways we escape and avoid in our culture.
Yes.
We do it by compulsive shopping. We do it by going
eating.
To pornography.
Mm-hmm.
We do it by gambling. We do it by really sitting like a couch potato in front of the television and just sort of opting out of real life and watching crazy shows about, you know, crazy people like Jersey Shore. And that's kind of an escape and avoidance for a lot of people. We do it by eating, by numbing ourselves, and certainly through alcohol and drugs and other substances. So we live in a society that teaches us we can escape and avoid and not deal with our problems and just distract ourselves. Now, there's healthy distraction. I do want to say that that's one of the practical helps I give in the book is not healthy distraction. I'm not talking about distraction of your thoughts, because we talked about how that doesn't work.
Right.
But it's distraction by doing something productive and getting our minds off of ourselves and onto other things. And certainly doing things for other people is a great way to distract yourself from worry and to do something that's actually productive for someone else.
Linda, I could talk to you all day about this, but we're out of time.
Thank
you so much for being willing to do this today. You're awesome. I love the book.
Well, I think it's something, Rita, that a lot of people struggle with, and I don't want to put condemnation. I don't want people to feel guilty with the worry that they're experiencing, because we all deal with worry. We all have to work on eliminating that from our lives. But I do want to say that you can do this to anybody who's listening to your program, that they can do it. They can eliminate worry from their life, and they can live in the peace and contentment that God has for each one of us. So thanks for having me, and hopefully we'll give some people a little bit of help.
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Great talking to you, Rita.
All right.
Take care.
God bless, Linda.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.